Hello, this is your host, Jigme Kelting, and welcome to the Jigme Kelting Show, a podcast where I sit down with speakers, singers, songwriters, musicians, sports personalities, actors, radio broadcasters, and a slew of many other professionals from a broad range of fields. This news conversation, American country singer songwriter Ethan Phillips talks about Songhouse experience, life growing up in Northeast Georgia, his move to Nashville, being influenced by Brad Paisley's early records, and more, as well as his admiration for Don Williams and Merle Haggard. And now, with that being said, I hope you enjoy the episode. Hello, Ethan. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? I appreciate you having me.
I mean, it's a pleasure to be able to speak with you today because, you know, I've been scrolling on TikTok and seeing what's been happening in terms of musically speaking. And, you know, I'm a huge fan of Songhouse. And I came across your video. And I was listening to that song and I was saying, who is this kid? You know, I was like, who is this kid and why have I not heard of him yet? It sort of reminded me like a lot of the way you sort of sang that song was like, this guy can strike a chord, man, with the way he sort of maneuvers around the notes, but also sings it with simplicity. And I think that comes with, I guess, the inspiration with Merle Haggard, because I remember with, I think it was Fender Guitars, and I think it was Ben Haggard talking about his late father. And he was talking about Mama Tried. And he basically said something about the simplicity of guitars, where he's not sort of overwhelming on notes and he's not overwhelming on the chord structure of a song. It's just a simple guitar stroke. The guitar chords, I guess, the simplicity of it is really what made Mama Tried such a beautiful story, because it was his upbringing. It was sort of Merle's way of saying when he got out of jail, and you know, it was sort of like this beautiful, I guess, simplistic aspect of how powerful music can be, if you don't overdo it. And so I guess as we're talking about music, I want to talk about obviously Merle Haggard, Don Williams, Dan Fogelberg, and stuff like those artists and stuff. I mean, you sort of grew up around that with your mom and dad's records collectively, right?
Yeah, my dad was predominantly the country fan. My mom listened to country music, but it was mostly like Conway Twitty and stuff like that. But dad had all the country records, the Merle Haggard and the Roger Miller and Dan Seals and Don Williams and all that. And mom had more of a classic rock stuff. And so I gravitated more toward the country stuff, but also, out of mom's music, I just fell in love with like James Taylor and all that kind of stuff. So, and then I also grew up in Northeast Georgia, so there's a lot of bluegrass around me and gospel music. And so I just love all that stuff. And so I've just always tried to figure out a way to kind of mesh it all. And I heard Dean Dillon say one time, and I, it was so cool because I thought that, I never thought I'd find anybody who kind of thought about songwriting the same way that I had kind of initially approached it and wanted to do it, is taking James Taylor melodies and putting country stories to them. I loved how he put that. And that's exactly how I've always thought about it. If there's a way to marry those, because, I think it just produces beautiful music, and, just country stories in general are, in my opinion, they're just capture life better than anything. So, yeah, I definitely had kind of a wide variety of influences, but country has just always been the main focal point of it.
For sure. And I guess you've also, I guess, growing up, I guess like the first like main influence that sort of got you like, I guess, hooked on country music sort of was the first, I guess, set of the early records of Brad Paisley. You know, like the records of Mud on the Tires and stuff like that. You know, like, why was sort of his records sort of the ones, I guess, what was it about his like early records that sort of like captivated you and wanted to, I guess, inspired you as a whole to get into country music and tell the story, I guess?
The first CDs that I ever remember owning were Mud on the Tires and Who Needs Pictures. So his first and third album. I didn't have his second one. I had the first and the third one. But they, I don't, there was something about how he was so good about capturing just his witty songs. One, he had such a way of almost having dad jokes in a song. And then two, just his ballads were incredible. And I thought he balanced that better than anybody. And his guitar playing, obviously, he's a phenomenal musician. And that's honestly what made me want to start playing initially, was listening to Brad.
For sure. And I guess just growing up, sort of, I guess the first major influences that you sort of were speaking of was obviously the Brad Paisley and his early stuff, but sort of you vividly remembered having that Mud on the Tires record, and you sort of listened to them all the time. And Brad's older music as well was a definite big influence for you. And but you've also been inspired by Don Williams himself. And I guess, as we were talking about it before we started recording, about Don Williams and his records, and I guess you have every single record of Don Williams
Oh yeah.
with you. I mean, was there one sort of record from Don that sort of was your favorite from the bunch, I guess?
Oh, that's tough. God, that's tough. I love Cafe Carolina, that record. As a song, a particular song, and one of his last records is called "And So It Goes," and I think that record is phenomenal front to back. I think that was the perfect record to kind of sum up his career. But just as far as songs off of a record, I'll stand by it. I think "Good Old Boys Like Me" is one of the best country songs ever written, and it was written by Bob McDill. I think that ca song captures the human experience in a song better than anything. It's just got that, just the lyrics of not even just growing up in the South, but just the constant struggle between, doing things moral and not like it. The first opening line of the song is, "When I was a kid, Uncle Remus would he put me to bed with a picture of Stonewall Jackson above my head. And Daddy came in to kiss his little man with gin on his breath and a Bible in his hand." So the whole song is dealing with this constant contradiction of life. And but at the same time, it encapsulates how beautiful that all can be. And I don't know of any other song that captures the human condition quite like that, and I love it. That's probably my favorite song of his, but and that's probably one of his most well known. But it deserves to be. It's beautiful.
Of course, and myself, just a fan of country music as a whole, and listening to people that have influenced sort of my sort of country music. I guess the love for country music that I felt first was when I first heard Vince Gill sing.
She's incredible.
Like I was listening to sort of his early records. And I was listening to some of the stuff that he did with his wife, Amy Grant, and stuff, and the combination that both of them have. And it's not like Vince like craves the spotlight. He doesn't. He appreciates being under the spotlight, but he doesn't. He's not one to long for it. He just loves to play the guitar and sort of be that person that just accompanies people. And I remember watching the CMT Giants and him being honored, and he was talking about it in his speech, in his acceptance speech. He said, I guess being a part of the Eagles as an honorary member of the Eagles, he basically said, they taught me that you can't, don't be the best player in the band.
Exactly.
You have to play up to them. And they made me play up to them. And, he was so grateful for that experience. And I remember the funny part of his speech was he was saying about his people can talk all about my records, and the 25 million records sold, and he sort of laughed it off. He said, "Hell, that hasn't changed in 40 something years or something." And that's just Vince as a whole and his character of what he's like. He's a softy at heart, and he knows how to inspire the young artists of today. And you're seeing that, I guess. I guess have you taken a chance to listen to Mo Pitney's stuff too? Because Mo Pitney has been
Oh, Mo's
just
one.
incredible.
Mo's one of my favorites. I've written with Mo, and he's when he came out, I saw him first probably 10 or 12 years ago, and I found out about him through bluegrass, and but no, he's phenomenal. I'm a fan of Mo's. He's great.
I mean, Mo Pitney, there's just something about sort of the way he goes about his style of singing, and hearing him bring back those roots of the traditional country roots, the traditional country music sounding sort of content. You don't get to hear that these days.
No.
Like I even remember Blake Shelton when he's on The Voice, and he was talking about Bob Dylan, and he was talking about all these country songs, and he says it's a dying art. It's a real dying art, and you're not hearing that music these days. A lot of people are just doing the mainstream radio hits nowadays. And I guess as we're talking about like this whole music category and Don Williams, I mean, I think when I first heard him sing If Hollywood Don't Need You,
That's a great song.
That's a great song. But also his song You're My Best Friend was also a captivating one. Till the Rivers All Run Dry is probably one of my favorites of all time of Don Williams. Do you sort of have when you get the chance to sing stuff from like people like Don Williams or people like I guess the people that you've been able to cover, the songs you've been able to cover, is there one particular song that sort of was like the most requested song for you to cover? What would that be?
Probably Fire and Rain by James Taylor is one that I get asked to do a lot. Or yeah, probably that one. And if I'm just sitting around playing guitar by myself, I usually gravitate toward that stuff. I'll play old deep cuts of stuff that nobody wants to listen to from a stage sometimes, I guess. If I could just sit on a stage and just play a bunch of Don Williams deep cuts, I could be completely satisfied. But no, I always try to I play around town a lot, and I travel and play, and I always try to include stuff like that that people wouldn't normally get to hear, because those songs, even though they weren't hits, they deserve to be highlighted. I mean, they're beautiful, and that. And I meant, and that's the thing about those old records is every song on them was phenomenal from front to back. I feel like everything now is with TikTok and all that is so single driven that people have lost their appreciation for a good album. They just want one song, and which is fine. I mean, that's not a bad thing. I don't want to like sit here and gripe about that kind of stuff. I'm happy that people want to hear one song from somebody, but I'm just always have appreciated how great front to back those albums were, and how much thought and planning and care was put into to making it a listening experience all the way through.
For sure. And as it's so interesting, this whole records, vinyl records these days. To me, I feel vinyl records are still growing in terms of people purchasing them, but I feel like now it's so digital that now things have changed immensely in terms of how we stream music and how we find artists. Because nowadays, like, you can find anybody on social media. You can find anybody on YouTube, and you can learn all the tips and tricks of stuff and how to edit stuff and things like that on YouTube and stuff like that, and that helps a lot. But when you consider the old style of music and the old sounding music, nothing compares to listen to it on a vinyl record, especially on a record player. There's just nothing like it. And I guess for me, like I have tons of records of my own, and being able to listen to people like Don Williams, I have like Merle Haggard records, and I think one of my favorite Merle Haggard records would have to be, I think the most recent one I purchased was when I think I was in Seattle, and I came across Merle's Farewell to Elvis record. That one's a really good one. I thought it was really cool to see his touch on it. And then I found Vince's record, which is really cool. Don Williams, just, I don't know what it is about Don. It just, he speaks to you. It's his style and his storytelling ability is something else.
There's nothing flashy about it. I mean, he's just there's no big fancy music production to hide behind. He's just a man telling his story, and to me that's as beautiful as music gets. It doesn't have to be super complex, and it just has to resonate with people. And I think it's, people get so lost in making things perfect that they forget that it's not supposed to be perfect. I heard Glenn, some I think it was Glenn Campbell say one time, if you do it perfect, they'll expect it that way every time. And I mean music's supposed to be raw and capture that emotion of just a moment. And when you worry about making it just polished and clean, I mean it loses that. And I think then there's a lot of great music nowadays. I don't want to sound like I'm jabbing at new music, because I'm not. There, I have friends and there's people in Nashville here that are just phenomenal, and they do a great job of honoring the traditional stuff and still keeping it relevant while doing their own thing. So it's definitely still around. It's just harder to find. I think you just have to. But the great thing about like TikTok and social media and all that is you're able to find that kind of stuff easier. It's kind of neat to feel like you've been a part of this person's journey all the way up. And so I mean it's kind of somebody was complaining about TikTok and stuff the other day when I was with them, to an older gentleman who had been doing music for a long time, and he said, you complain about it. He said, we would love to have something like that when we were coming up. So it's kind of a blessing and a curse. I mean, it's people who create music, they don't want to have to worry about making videos constantly and all that. They're just wanting to make music. And it's kind of wild to expect them to be a graphic designer and a video editor and all this other content creator at the same time. But I mean, anymore, that's about the only way you're going to be able to get people to hear it.
For sure. And I guess the whole thing with, I guess, when it comes to your music and sort of your, I guess, your upbringing sort of started when growing up in Northeast Georgia,
Correct.
having influences of bluegrass and country and stuff like that. Can you tell us about sort of life growing up and what was it like in, I guess, being raised in being born and raised in Clayton, Georgia, and what was it like there?
Oh, I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. I do. I miss home sometimes because I love the mountains. And but no, growing up was great. It was a small community. Very tight knit. And I had a great family, or still do have a great family. And I'm very blessed in that aspect. And mom and dad have always been really encouraging and supportive about music. They were very adamant on education, going to college and all that stuff, which is understandable. So I did. But growing up, I mean, if you wanted to play, there was always somebody willing to let you play. I didn't start playing guitar till I was 13 years old. I was in a steel guitar class in middle school, and why a bunch of hillbillies in Northeast Georgia had access to steel guitars, I have no idea, but we did. And the teacher, we had started playing classic rock songs on the steel drums, and the teacher asked if anybody wanted to play guitar along with it, and I volunteered, and I'd never played guitar a day in my life. And she said, "You know how to play?" I thought, "Oh yeah, I can play." And so I had to convince mom to go buy me a guitar so I could figure out how to play this song before she knew I didn't know how to play. But so in that aspect, people are very encouraging, and I grew up playing. When I finally started playing, playing in church and all that kind of stuff, and that kind of took off from there. But just the town in general, it was a great place to be raised. I was always, fishing and just hanging out with friends. And I mean, it's a town where there's not a lot to do, but at the same time, there's a million things to do. I mean, if you can find something to do, but a lot of it was outdoors. And but it's just, the perfect, it's kind of like Mayberry and Andy Griffith. It was the perfect place to grow up.
Of course. And I guess then you sort of moved to Nashville in January of 2020. I guess sort of, and listening to an interview that you were doing, and you were talking about like your main goal of why you moved to Nashville, and because it was because you wanted to be a writer. And sort of, can you tell me more about sort of how the move to Nashville was, and leaving what you've known for so long, which is Northeast Georgia, and what is, I guess, is your home. And so what was it like sort of transitioning to Music City, and sort of getting your feet wet there and getting experiences there? Just tell me about that.
It was definitely a culture shock. I mean, even when I went to college 40 minutes from my hometown in a town that was, pretty equivalent to where I grew up. And so I never felt like I really got away from home in a sense, because every weekend I would go home and work at the local hardware store, and I'd go to church and all that, and then go back to college for the week. And so when I moved here, it was the first, it was kind of like the college, the experience people would probably get when they actually do move away to go to college. I had never been away from home that far, and I'm very much so a homebody. I was the kind of kid growing up that if I went and stayed the night at a friend's house, I couldn't stay the whole night. I'd end up calling and have somebody come pick me up. So I think it really shocked mom and dad that I moved. But at the same time, I knew that if I wanted to pursue this, that there was no other. You can be the best person that, Northeast Georgia has to offer, but that's as far as it's going to get. And there's no education like being here and learning from the people and being immersed in it every day. And you're not going to meet your maximum potential until you do that. And so when I finally did move, it was probably a terrible time to move. I didn't know it at the time, but then a month and a half after I moved, we had a tornado and then COVID, and so that was definitely a kind of a hiccup in the road, but it ended up working out. I knew a couple people before I moved, and that definitely helped, and they introduced me to some people, and I was able to make enough connections in that month and a half, 2 months, however long it was, to kind of carry me through COVID, and we were able to ride over Zoom. And when everybody kind of went back to their hometowns, I was still able to write and kind of feel like I was getting something done. But that first year was kind of, I wouldn't call it a wash, but it was definitely, it at the, I feel like I got stuff done, but at the same time, it kind of felt, I guess everybody had that feeling. It felt like they weren't really accomplishing much during that year. But at the same time, in hindsight, looking back on it, I felt like a lot of really cool things came out of it. And but since then, but being here in it, there's nothing like it. I mean, the people that you meet, and it felt so impossible when you're looking at it from the outside. But once you get in it and you're in it every day, you realize just how attainable it can be once you. I mean, it's like any job, really. I mean, if you do it long enough, you're bound to run into people and that kind of stuff, and you just make connections. And overall, it just feels like a family. I mean, it truly does. The people that you meet and stuff, they become your family up here. And so as crazy as it seems to some people to want to move and play music for a living, it's definitely a I wouldn't trade it for anything. I love it.
Yeah, and but like I guess like when you move to a different part of the country, and you sort of move to a different city, and you sort of have the difficulties of acclimating towards making new friends, and making those connections with people, and getting the chance to write with people, and to do like songwriter in the rounds sort of series, it's hard to adjust to it when you're very like when you're brand new to something that you haven't experienced before. But like I guess like you had this experience of being able to go to Songhouse, and being able to work with a lot of great artists, and obviously you had a video out there performing an original song. Tell us about the experience in Songhouse, and what would you sort of advise people who wanted to I guess to join that sort of group?
Yeah, I Tyler and all that, they're great folks, and I had got introduced to them through my friend Zandy Hollop, who I guess was one of their original people. I guess I'm not sure, but she had a song blow up with them, and she had kind of done a country takeover one, and I don't know that any of those videos ever got released, but I had done probably two or three with them before this one that you saw. But I would mostly just end up writing. I never really performed, and just and but that song that I played on that Songhouse video, it was I had actually written that song on my own time. It was actually about 2 or 3 years old. I didn't write it at Songhouse. They were experimenting, trying something different of artists bringing in their own songs and trying that instead of trying to write them on the spot. And, typically what they will do is you'll go and there'll be a group of like 12 to 15 people or something like that. And they'll match everybody up in groups of like two or three. And they'll put you in separate rooms and they kind of give you a prompt. And you'll have 30 minutes to write a hook, basically. And so that's their. I guess their foundation for all of it, and now they're trying to kind of branch out and try new things. So that song that I played was, I guess, a kind of an experimental thing of trying to bring in our own stuff. But no, the group itself, they're great people, and I'm truly thankful for the opportunity to be able to go do it. They're yeah, if anybody gets a chance, I highly recommend it. Yeah.
For sure. And I guess as we're wrapping up here, I was just wondering if there was a chance where you could just give us a little taste of an original song of yours,
Yeah,
if you
I can
don't
do that.
mind.
Yeah, I'll do that. I let's see. Hope this thing's it. I played last night and it was cold outside, so this thing might not be in tune. You'll have to forgive me. I might have to tune it. I'll play a piece of a song that. I recorded eight songs in August, and we're still kind of finishing them up and working on them. But I think this is going to be the first one we release out of all them. But this is I wrote this with my buddy Justin Dukes and another friend of ours, and it's called Montana, and it was written in January of last year, I think it was, of this year. And it's just kind of become one of my favorite songs that I've been a part of. But so hopefully we'll have this out in the first of the year sometime. We'll see. I don't know exactly the timeline, but at some point within the next few months, hopefully. But yeah, it goes like this. I always heard that you can't trust the wind, but that never stopped me trying. She gave me half a chance, I'd try again. Say I had a chance would just be. See the spirit that you just can't tame. A restless heart you'll never change you free. Like I've never felt before. Got caught up in her endless skies. That picture perfect sunset bright stayed long enough to leave me more. They don't make them like Montana. I heard word that she was somewhere up near Bozeman. Knowing her, she's drifting across. Either way, no matter where she's going, without me, it's still too far. See the spirit that you just can't tame. A restless heart you'll never change in freedom. I've never felt before. Got caught up in her endless skies. That picture perfect sunset bright stayed long enough to leave me home. They don't make them like Montana. Wish her soul would settle down and have the heart to stay, but I'd settle for our path to cross again someday. She's a spirit that you just can't tame. Restless heart, you'll never change you free. Like I've never felt before. Got caught up in her endless skies. That picture perfect sunset bright stayed long enough to leave me home. They don't make them like Montana anymore. They don't make them like Montana.
Well, I mean, there's just something about just the beauty of having just the simplicity of playing the guitar, because you know, like we were talking about earlier, how sort of Merle Haggard had that skill set of having Mama tried, and Ben talking about sort of simplistic aspect and not sort of overdoing it, and how I guess how much more powerful it can be when you sort of just strip it down to a guitar and just play it simply and not overthink it and not overdo it. And it's just that, just the beauty of it. And that's a great song. And we're looking forward to hearing your project and seeing what songs come out of it. And you're gonna go a long way. Well, I mean, we've reached the end of our conversation together, but thank you again for speaking with me. It was such a pleasure.
Appreciate you having me. It's been an honor. Thank you.
Well, I mean, to those who made it this far in the episode, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with country singer-songwriter Ethan Phillips. You can reach Ethan on his socials. Plus, you can visit for more info, ethanphillipsmusic.com, if you want more information on him. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, feel free to share with others, post about on social media, or leave a rating or review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow the show on all social media platforms. I've been your host, Jigme Kelsang. Thanks for tuning into the show.